Charlie White, convicted and removed. Who will be the next Secretary of State? Rick Santorum comes up short on ballot petitions. Will he be in the Indiana primary? Ballot problems for Jim Wallace, competing images from the leading candidates for governor, and questions about where Dick Lugar lives. That plus Super Bowl reviews and more on Indiana Week in Review for the week ending February 10, 2012.
Ice Miller, proud to support Indiana Week in Review. The path to a successful business has unexpected twists and turns. The legal professionals at Ice Miller are dedicated to guiding businesses along the journey. Experience takes businesses to the top. Ice Miller can help them stay there. Ice Miller, it's a complex world. Be advised.
This week, a jury found now former Secretary of State Charlie White guilty of six felonies, including voter fraud. He was automatically removed from office. It was early Saturday morning when Charlie White walked out of a Hamilton County courtroom, a convicted felon. The governor wasted no time naming Jerry Bonnet as his interim replacement. And on Sunday, White was on Fox News accusing the governor of crimes.
Mitch Daniels has voted incorrectly, according to the standards put on by me, the last 10 straight elections. And then he votes down at the governor's mansion where everyone knows he does not live. The local media will not talk about this because, again, it's inconvenient.
Who will be the next permanent Secretary of State? It's the first question for our Indiana Week in Review panel. Democrat Dan Parker, Republican Mike McDaniel, Leslie Weidenbender, editor at thestatehousefile.com, and John Ketzenberger, president of the Indiana Fiscal Policy Institute. I'm Wish TV Statehouse reporter Jim Schiller. Mike McDaniel, the state Supreme Court has agreed to hear a Democratic argument that the office go to their 2010 candidate, Bob Oesterle. Does he have a chance to get it?
I don't think so. I think I'd be very surprised if the Supreme Court doesn't overturn the Rosenberg decision, because basically what it boils down to is whether or not he had authority to overturn a bipartisan commission that voted 3-0 the other direction. I think that's
the question. The State Recount Commission.
The State Recount Commission. I think that's the question, and I'd be very surprised if that's not overturned.
As State Democratic Chairman Dan, are the person who brought this challenge, are you encouraged by the fact that the state Supreme Court is going to hear it?
Well, this was good news for everyone involved. All sides wanted the Supreme Court to bring clarity and finality to the issue. So that's good news for everyone.
It was your hope that they would lift the stay on Judge Louis Rosenberg's order, right?
That's what we were going to ask for.
And install Bob Oesterle.
Part of the reason we asked for that was because we wanted the Supreme Court to take the case. We were the first ones to ask the Supreme Court to move on it. I think Mike is incorrect. The judge did have the authority to do it, and part of it was procedural with the recount commission because they did not allow, on a partisan basis, allow us to depose witnesses in the lead up to the commission hearing. So we had no idea what Charlie White was going to say, and it's tough to present a case against him when you don't know what he's going to say.
Charlie White is scheduled for sentencing on February 23rd, prior to this February 29th state Supreme Court hearing. He intends to ask the judge to reduce the six felonies to misdemeanors, and he seems to think that there's some chance that he could get the office back.
Well, I think that's a case where the chances are slim and none, and none left town, because I just have a hard time, first of all, seeing that the judge will reduce these charges to misdemeanors, and secondly, I think that the chances of him regaining the office, there are so many legal wheels in movement right now. It's really hard to sort out, but I have a hard time envisioning a scenario where Charlie White goes back in as Secretary of State.
Because we're not just talking about one offense here that's a felony. Exactly. It's not as if he was found guilty of several misdemeanors and one felony. He was found guilty of six felonies. So for a judge to turn all six felonies into misdemeanors, I think would be a huge surprise.
There's some irony, isn't there, that all of this is taking place on the week of the filing deadline, mm-hmm. the busiest week in a four-year period for the Secretary of State's
office. Well, that's why the governor was right to act quickly to get an interim Secretary of State, because this is the busiest week of the year for the Secretary of State. You know, not only have the presidential filings, but all the candidates for all offices. And it's a hectic time down there. And at noon, up until noon on Friday, it was like Grand Central Station down there. So he was right to do that. He had to do that and did it. And Jerry Bonnet's done a good job since he's been taken over.
Jerry Bonnet was the chief of staff. He had been the chief counsel to Todd Rokita when he was in the office. He's essentially a caretaker in that position at the moment. Were you surprised to see the governor go with a caretaker?
Well, that's what the law, the governor was following the law, and he did so, and he did it quickly. Kudos to him to do that on a temporary basis until there is clarity to this. But at the end of the day, the argument against our contest in this was that Charlie White was properly registered. Originally, the argument was it didn't matter if it was legal or illegal registration, that he was properly registered. The fact is he's now been convicted of voter registration fraud. There's no argument.
Time now for viewer feedback. Each week we pose an unscientific poll question in connection with our Ice Miller email and text alerts. This week's question is, who should be the next Secretary of State? Your choices are A, Bob Oesterle, or B, the governor's choice. Last week's question was, how will Dan Burton be remembered? 31% said as a fighter, 27% said as a right-wing radical, 42% said not for long. To take part in the poll, go to WFYI.org/IWIR and look for the poll. Rick Santorum suddenly has momentum in the race for the GOP presidential nomination, but his campaign didn't collect the required petition signatures to achieve ballot status here in Indiana. The Santorum campaign is 24 signatures short of the 500 required in the 7th Congressional District after a number of signatures were disqualified, most because they were from the wrong congressional district. Santorum is challenging decisions made by the Marion County Voter Registration Office and still hopes to gain ballot status.
Santorum campaign has given us a letter with attachments that show 49 names that we have marked as not registered. They have asked us to take another look at them, and we are in the process of reviewing those 49 names.
I believe he can go to the election commission and possibly to court, and so I think they will exhaust all of their remedies before they throw in the towel in the state of Indiana.
State Senator Mike Delf, who's a Santorum volunteer there, preceded by Cindy Mowry of the Voter Registration Office, Dan Parker, will Santorum get on the ballot here?
I think if he presents a case to the Election Commission, I think he will. The Election Commission historically has sided with placing people on the ballot as opposed to keeping them off, but he will need to bring a case to the Election Commission that certain names were disqualified in Marion County that shouldn't have been. I do know that Marion County had a much more stringent disqualification rate than other counties. So it'll be interesting. I'm very familiar with one person who was disqualified
Dan Parker
on one petition, and I'm pretty sure I'm registered to vote.
There are some questions about what the campaign did and also about how the Voter Registration Office dealt with some of these petitions. Four people on the Election Commission, two Democrats, two Republicans. You need to get three votes to make something happen. The Democrats are likely to vote to put Santorum on the ballot to make things difficult for Mitt Romney, are they not?
I don't think those are the way these decisions are derived. I really don't. I don't think people base those decisions on what they think might be to their political advantage. I refuse to believe that. I may be naive to that, but some people would say, but that's the way I feel about it. This is a hard process. We've talked about this over and over in this show, but I'm always amazed at how these presidential candidates just don't have enough strength in their organizations nationally to understand what you have to do state by state to get on the ballot.
They left the Santorum campaign apparently left it to volunteers.
And this process is difficult. And Dan will tell you, we've all done this, that you've got to have so many more than you actually think you need, because some people are going to be disqualified regardless. Mm-hmm. And so it's always smart to come in with an excess amount. And plus, when you compound that with the fact that you're dealing with new districts,
right.
New congressional districts, where some people may have thought they lived in one district and signed a petition sheet, when they actually live in a different congressional
district.
That's
part of the problem here.
It makes it even more difficult.
I mean, the Marion County one, 7th District is wholly contained in Marion County. So Santorum's campaign is a little bit culpable in this.
But there's more than one district.
Yeah, but they also ran into voters who live in the 5th District who used to live in the 7th and didn't know the difference.
Well, if they were on top of their game, would have known. They would have taken their petitions back like most in-state campaigns do, and they check it against the voter file to make sure you know where people live.
And they would have started on this earlier than they did.
Well, it takes longer than people think.
I'm also not sure that they thought that they were going to be in the race by the time the primary came to Indiana. So there could have been a lot of scrambling around just at the idea that he needed to be on the ballot in Indiana.
There's been a lot of hope expressed by the governor and by Eric Holcomb, state Republican chairman, that there would be a contested Republican primary in Indiana come May. If it's going to happen, it's probably going to be Romney versus Santorum, the way it looks at the moment. It could go up in smoke right here.
Well, it could go up in smoke, and that would be, I'm sure, disappointing for Eric because he's promoted the notion of having a primary because he likes the attention that it brings to Indiana and to the Republican races. But I think Dan's right. I think that they will, if they can, go for inclusion. And, you know, I think Mike has used the term, you know, there are lifetimes in politics. There's still a long time between now and May. But if Santorum's on the ballot and he continues to have, I mean, he's in life number 4 or 5 now, then, you know, there may be a chance.
I can remember sitting down in a hallway in Lake County counting petition signatures for John Mutz to get him on the ballot. And I thought, I better sit down and count these. I counted the petitions and only came up with 350. And a sweat starts pouring down off of me because the deadline was up. The door opens up and the lady goes, "Oh, you're still here. Here's the rest of your petition."
All right. Republican candidate for governor Jim Wallace has similar problems. The Marion County Voter Registration Office certified just 486 signatures in the 7th Congressional District, and that left Wallace short of the required 500. That was on Wednesday. Wallace talked to us about his options this way.
One option clearly is to request a reconsideration of a valid registration. Another option would be to file the ballots, what we're considering to be provisionally, and then lodge a challenge with the Indiana Election Commission. Third option would be to just kind of call it quits as to where we are right now.
All right, let me walk you through this because I got a little bit wrong there. He was ruled to be 111 signatures short on Wednesday. He went back, asked him to consider some others. Now it's at 486. He's still 14 short. He's filed with the state. He's going to wait for somebody to challenge him. You think Wallace makes it on the ballot?
Yeah, I do. Because if he's challenged, then it goes forward, and the Election Commission will take a look at this. And again, it's 2-2. And Mike, I'm not saying that you're naive, but I think that they will vote for inclusion on that panel, and that I think Jim Wallace ends up on the ballot in Indiana. And, you know, I'm sure that's to Mike Pence's chagrin, but, you know, somebody who's conducting a gridiron, we're fully counting on him being at the gridiron on the 22nd.
All right, there's
your
gridiron.
I actually think Mike Pence is probably not that overly concerned. I think Mike Pence would be best off here to just let this go and not bring a challenge. And
well, let
run
me tell
his
you,
campaign.
Let me tell you, the comment from the Mike Pence campaign today is no comment.
that's the right answer.
Right.
You know.
But if he's got a contested primary, he's got to approach this race differently. He's got to spend a lot more money before May.
Does he?
Than he would otherwise, doesn't he?
But it just strengthens your name idea and everything else statewide because you got it out there that much earlier. And when you've got all the money that Mike Pence has and apparently will have, I don't see that as a problem. I think
you think
it's a plus.
He'd rather have Jim Wallace
in this
race.
I think he'd rather have a reason to be out there and get himself ready for the fall than not, actually.
I think John hit the first nail on the head, which is somebody's got to walk in there and challenge his petitions to get this process started.
Right.
Then it goes to the commission. So there's a lot of procedural matters here. And I know the two
but
Democrats.
But that challenge has to take place between now and next Friday.
Yeah, I mean, right. I know the two Democrats on the Election Commission, Anthony Long and Sarah Reardon, are two very honorable people, and they're going to do the right thing.
Which would be give Mike Pence an opponent, right? From your perspective.
I think, as you said, something about voting for inclusion.
Well, a case has to be presented. I mean, Mike's been in front of that body before. I mean, they don't just vote partisan lines. There's got to be some backup. But they will vote for inclusion if he presents a case.
Okay, so tell me this. If the Santorum campaign is successful here, and if Jim Wallace gets on the ballot when they didn't have the right number of certified signatures, does that suggest that there's a problem with the ballot requirement in this
state? I will
say
that there is a bill pending.
A problem with the way that it's administered?
There's a bill pending authored by Craig Battles to do petition reform. I know a little something about petition issues. There's things that can be done to clean up this process. Mike's gone through it. A lot of this stuff should be handled, sent directly from the counties to the state. People need to be informed quicker. People can drop their stuff off earlier. I mean, some of these candidates have been done with these for months.
Right.
And they've sat on them, and they all dump them at the same day, and these county clerks get inundated with these things.
Well, and just listening to Jim Wallace talk about the process, it becomes clear that every county does things just a little bit differently.
No, that's true.
And that raises questions about the process as well.
But also, if you're Jim Wallace and you've spent $1 million of your own money in this campaign and you're already running TV ads, you need to figure this out.
Well, you need to figure this out. And you know, there's an interesting little movement on Facebook about him as, you know, possible lieutenant governor candidate. So maybe there's some of that in the back of his mind. Who knows?
The two leading candidates for governor used this week's filing deadline for photo opportunities. Republican Mike Pence made a big show of it, trailed by 92 volunteers supplied with 92 boxes of petitions. The idea was to display evidence of statewide support and a statewide organization. Democrat John Gregg arrived with one box and his son alongside. Gregg said he's a workhorse and not a show horse. Everyone with a job should be working, he said, to emphasize his top priority. Leslie Weidenbender, which one of those made the best use of that opportunity?
I actually think they both did a pretty good job. I thought it represented each of them pretty well, and I thought they both looked pretty good there in the photo op. So I'm calling a draw on that one.
Well, I think she's absolutely right. I mean, you know, Pence shows the great show of force, and you see the contrast between Mike Pence and John Gregg personally. And John made sure he understood that when he, you know, was offering his comments about it. So, you know, I think it's going to be a competition of contrasts, and we've seen it from the very beginning.
A little bit of a chess game there. I mean, they both have had these petitions ready. So you wait for the one guy to go do his show, and then you try to counter that with a different message.
Well, it reinforces the message that's going to be played out in this campaign, that Mike Pence is a lot of show. You know, he had several counties where he had a box, but yet one signature in the box. So, you know, I don't know why he wasted an entire box for just one signature, but, you know.
I understand there's a YouTube clip of the folks with the recall petition signatures for Scott Walker in Wisconsin that looked a lot like that.
Let me tell you, this was a perfect picture of where these two campaigns are at this time. Almost twice as many signatures for Pence, a huge organization statewide, where John Gregg right now, with the Democrat Party in disarray, not only over right to work and post-right to work from his comments on that, to not been able to pick his state chairman to replace Dan Parker, to all the things that go along with that. And Pence, on the other hand, shows this huge organization, great force, great effort, great organization, and John's in there carrying it by himself.
Let me play.
It's symbolic of the two campaigns.
Let me play devil's advocate there. If you're Mike Pence and you've got this great organization, does it make sense to be spending your time getting three times the number of signatures you need instead of just making the requirement?
Yes. Only, and the reason I say that is because when people sign up to be volunteers for a campaign, if you don't give them something to do, you're making a huge mistake. And what they did was they involved a lot of people statewide in every county in Indiana, and they're taking advantage of that enthusiasm they have for him, and that's a smart thing for them to do this early in the campaign.
Well, let me respond to several of the nonsense that you just threw out there, Michael.
Give it your best shot.
Number one, I loved the severe lack of diversity in the people who showed up to work for Mike Pence.
I didn't see much diversity in John Gregg's group. Him and his son.
Yeah, it's him and his son, because he's a workhorse and not a show horse. The second thing is the fact that John is consolidated in the Democratic Party. He's unopposed in the primary.
Yeah.
And so is Joe Donnelly, and so is President Obama. So we have our act together. Yeah. You don't.
You have your act together?
Yeah.
That's why you have no offices? I mean, come on.
Let's move on. Where does Richard Lugar live? It's suddenly an issue in the U.S. Senate race.
A new web video from a Republican political action committee, American Bridge, points out that Dick Lugar is registered to vote at an Indianapolis home he sold 35 years ago. He lives in Virginia, and while the video suggests something sinister, the senator is following an accepted practice.
It's just like the United States military. If you're a military personnel and you're in defense of this country, in service to this country, and you're overseas, you keep your last place of residence.
But a recent admission by Lugar that he stays in hotels when he comes back to Indiana has prompted Indiana Democrats to challenge Lugar to disclose where he stays at taxpayer expense and how much he pays.
He owes it to the people of Indiana to disclose what he spent the money on.
It's all an effort to boost the chances of Lugar primary opponent Richard Murdoch by reinforcing the fact that Lugar is seeking a seventh term.
A quick correction, American Bridge is a Democratic PAC, not a Republican PAC. Mike McDaniel, what do you make of that challenge?
If you can't beat him on Election Day, you do this kind of silly stuff. Nobody's going to challenge the fact that Dick Lugar has been a Hoosier all his life.
But this isn't, I don't think this is a legal question. They're trying to make the point that he's out of touch.
I don't see how he's out of touch. He's represented this state for a long time, and he's done it beautifully. I think most people respect him from both political parties. He gets about 25% to 35% of the Democrat vote in every general election. So a lot of people must think he's done a pretty good job.
You want him to itemize all of his expenses when he's in Indiana?
At taxpayer expense.
Well,
there are some times where his campaign has indicated that the campaign is paid for some of his travel expenses. We're not asking for that.
But it's legit. He's a U.S. senator. He needs to come back and visit with constituents. It's a legitimate expense, right?
He needs to visit with his constituents, and he needs to stay in a hotel to do it because he doesn't live here. He lives in Virginia.
Well, you know, when Lee Hamilton was in Congress, he lived in the Washington, D.C. area. He didn't maintain an Indiana residence.
Well, I know that our candidate for the United States Senate maintains an Indiana residence and will continue to maintain an Indiana residence when he gets elected to the United States Senate.
Does this resonate with average voters?
Oh, I don't know if it resonates with average voters, but I think it will raise a red flag in the minds of some voters, and I think it's an issue that the Murdoch campaign has got a lot of stock in because they see it as a real opportunity here for them to call into question this very thing about Senator Lugar. So I agree with Mike and his assessment of the senator and the way most people think about him. But this issue could be a real problem for him down the road in terms of causing a question in people's minds.
Strange bedfellows. You have Dick Lugar on one side, on the other side, you have the Democrats, Richard Murdoch, and the Tea Party.
Yeah, it is really fascinating. I mean, clearly Democrats think that they have a much better chance of beating Richard Murdoch if he wins the primary. So you're going to be seeing Democrats side with the Tea Party folks in a lot during the next few months.
Will it be successful?
I think that it is being somewhat successful. I mean, I still think Richard Murdoch has a huge hill to climb to be able to defeat Richard Lugar. Having said that, these kinds of messages, when they come one right after another, do start to resonate, I think.
Finally now, Indianapolis won rave reviews this week for the way it hosted Super Bowl 46. In its final news briefing, the Super Bowl committee also said it expects to pay all of its bills and have a surplus. Problems were rare, and for most of those who spoke or wrote about attending, the event exceeded expectations. Committee members said it was a matter of executing a game plan that had been in the works for more than 4 years.
This morning, I think we can say that there really were two winners of Super Bowl 46. I think both the Giants and Indianapolis came out on top.
That was Mark Miles, chair of the Super Bowl committee, Dan Parker. It was a good game, too, wasn't it?
For two quarters.
You're a New England Patriots fan?
Lifelong. Lifelong New England Patriots fan for all those that won up, cast stones.
Yeah, you remember the pre-Brady years.
I remember the Jim Plunkett years.
There you go.
Okay, well, Super Bowl, aside from the outcome, this was a great experience.
Oh, this was great for Indianapolis. My friends that came in from Boston had a great time. The reviews that I read in the Boston Globe were just amazing. It's time for us to take the next step and and host a national political convention.
Well, you've pursued that before.
Yes. Yeah, and I will told do it Dan, again. I told Dan I'd help him if they want to bring theirs there. I think it would be huge for Indianapolis. The Super Bowl committee did a great job. Allison Langton, Mel Raines, Mark Miles, Mayor Ballard, everybody did a great job. And we're only going to reap great benefits from this down the road from the events that will come here because of the publicity we got from this.
And whoever took care of Mother Nature.
Whoa. Yeah, that's a new definition. That's a new definition of Chamber of Commerce.
Oh, my gosh. There had to be a Faustian deal in there somewhere.
We're going to do this again?
I would be surprised if we don't. I think it'll be, 5 to 7 years, maybe a little longer, but I think Indianapolis gets another Super Bowl.
That's Indiana Week in Review for this week. Our panel is Democrat Dan Parker, Republican Mike McDaniel, Leslie Weidenbender of the StateHouseFile.com, and John Ketzenberger of the Indiana Fiscal Policy Institute. If you'd like a podcast of this program, you can find it at WFYI.org/podcast. Or starting Monday, you can stream it or get it on demand from Xfinity. Just go to Hoosier TV and look for Indiana Week in Review under News. I'm Jim Shello of Wish TV. We'll see you again next week.
Ice Miller, proud to support Indiana Week in Review. Things can go wrong in 1,000 different ways. Businesses need a law firm that knows the thousand and first. The team of legal professionals at Ice Miller is committed to helping put the pieces back together. Ice Miller, it's a complex world. Be advised.